Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I am your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Well, hello, Judy. And our topic today is...
What do you mean, faith is what heals people?
Yeah, funny thing, we came by that topic. And, you know, we'll get into what exactly led us to that topic for today in just a bit. First, want to mention, just encourage you, since you're listening to this podcast, to interact with the place where you got your podcast, which is to say, rate us and comment and subscribe and do that kind of stuff. And also, we'd like you to tell your friends about the podcast, because we are increasing our listenership and want to see that trend continue. This podcast is based on the book that came out just a little over a year ago called Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back by me. That's Dr. Bruce Chalmer. That's how it will read on the places where you can buy books from. And we hope you will acquire the book. And that will lead us very nicely into how come we got to this topic. So, Judy, I'm going to invite you, if you would, to read a review that we got not too long ago from a listener, Diana Acosta. We don't know her personally, but it's a 5-star review that she put on Amazon.com about the book, and that's going to launch us into our conversation.
Okay, so Diana writes on Amazon, "Be kind, don't panic, and have faith. This is an arc. In a very important part of the book, Dr. Chalmer mentions a word that I did not think a couples therapist could mention, faith, and the explanation given about it in this book is so interesting, so, at least to me, new, which is precisely why I recommend that everyone read this book. Here, faith is explained beyond fundamentalism or religious parameters. It is even explained far beyond the meaning of the word itself, that meaning we find in the dictionary. And the word itself here does not come with pretense or deceit. It comes pure and simple, explanatory and meaningful, and can surprise anyone very much why it is necessary to keep it in mind in a relationship, especially if there are conflicts or problems with the couple. I'm not going to spoil anything regarding the term faith mentioned in Reigniting the Spark. You'll be the ones who know what I am talking about when you start reading." Well, thank you, Diana.
Thank you, Diana, indeed. And that's, I was really pleased to see that particular review, because I've commented, I think I have on the podcast before too, that, you know, the thing that distinguishes the book that I wrote and the approach that I'm putting forth here is particularly the stuff about faith. There's lots of really good books on relationships and a fair number of clunkers as well, frankly. But the good ones do cover a lot of be kind, what I call be kind and don't panic. They don't often cover have faith. Mm-hmm. And I'm claiming faith is really the key there. So we got that review. And then, not too long ago, Judy and I did a training, as we have started to do for folks. We did a training for a group of social workers and the title of the training was indeed Couples Therapy in 7 Words. And we got back a number of comments, you know, in the evaluations, and they were mostly very positive. We were very pleased. And there was one that I thought was really kind of intriguing. And what I don't have no idea who this person was. It was one of the participants. There were two questions, basically, we got answers to. One question was, what did you like about it? You know, what was good? This is an answer to the question, what was missing or what would you like to see different? So the comment was, explanation of role of faith still not clear. Could be a personal issue, which I thought was an interesting comment. In other words, somebody is kind of struggling with the notion of faith, but whatever their personal struggles are, what we were putting across, and I guess I'll say that in the singular, because it's kind of my shtick, you know, what I was putting across just wasn't quite clarifying it enough. And so we got that comment, and Judy and I were talking about that, and well, you can speak for yourself.
Well, I said, you know, sometimes I'm wondering the same thing. You know, I'm not sure exactly what you mean by faith.
Yeah. So we were thinking, well, what a great topic for our podcast. Mm-hmm. So here we are. And I suppose maybe I could pick up on that very question. Like, you know, you're wondering, what do I mean by faith? Mm-hmm. You know? So what I mean and what I say in the book and what I say when I talk about this is faith is when you accept that reality is right, by which I mean reality is right to be what it is. In other words, it's not just that you accept reality. That's a given. You better accept reality, folks. If you don't accept reality, you're already in trouble. And reality, let's be clear, I don't know exactly what reality is, and you don't know exactly what reality is. We have our best guesses, and of course, that's the domain of science, right? Science will tell us, as well as it can, what reality seems to be based on the data that they have. And to be a good scientist, you have to be willing, and not just willing, eager to change your ideas of what reality is based on the data that you see. You know, you can't be stuck on saying, I insist that a particular explanation of reality must be true, and I'm going to ignore all the data that says to the contrary. Indeed, a really good scientist, good scientists get excited about data that disconfirms their favorite hypotheses.
So is reality right when young boys are being killed in Mozambique?
Well,
is reality right when there's the Holocaust?
Exactly.
You know, is reality right when there are these atrocities around the world?
Well, of course not. So what do I mean by right? I'm claiming yes, right? I'm saying faith says that reality is right to be what it is. And yet, as you of course point out, reality is full of horrible things as well as joyous things, right? There's also wonderful things mm-hmm. about reality. So where do I get off claiming that the thing that heals people is the notion that reality is right to be what it is, even when reality is simply horrible and evil and all kinds of things are wrong with it? Well, what I claim is that even evil, even things that are just, you know, that I feel like we are called upon to be decent people, we are called upon to oppose evil. We are called upon to participate in making things better. Even those things have a basis in things that kind of have to be there, you know? The ability to be cruel is a corollary of our ability to be aggressive, which is necessary for survival. I'm not saying that, I'm not defending cruelty. I'm just saying it's kind of part of the package. It's like saying, you know, death, which, you know, from Jewish terms, you know, those of us listening to the podcast know we come from a Jewish perspective. In Jewish terms, death is something to be opposed and postponed, you know, as much as possible. But we also have to accept that without death, life would be meaningless. Mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to say, oh, just, you know, we'll just have to smile at evil and say, sorry, that comes with a package. No, on the contrary, we have to oppose evil. But the big picture is that life is going to contain good and evil, and we're going to have to work with that premise. You know, there's a Talmudic story where the rabbis decide that they're going to kill the evil inclination. You know, the rabbis talk about the good inclination mm-hmm. and the evil inclination, right? Which we all have, the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. And so they, of course, in this story, they personify them, right? So they decide, you know, we really ought to kill the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, because he's a bad dude. You know, he makes us do terrible things. Mm-hmm. So the evil inclination says to them, no, you better not do that. You know, you'll be sorry if you kill me. And so the rabbis think about it and they say, well, maybe he's got a point. Let's lock him up for a week and see what happens. And of course, what happens when they lock him up for a week?
I don't know. What happens?
What happens is all over the country, hens stop laying eggs. In other words, what they're saying is what we call the evil inclination also is the basis of things that aren't evil at all. It's the basis of creativity, you know? It's a very thin line between being greedy and being creative, or being, you know, pushing to be productive and grasping after things. There's what the rabbis conclude from this story is the idea is not to eliminate the evil inclination because it's a necessary part of life. The idea is to channel it mm-hmm. for good.
So how does that fit into relationships with reality being right?
Yeah. So what I differentiate between in terms of that question, I differentiate between the idea of accepting reality and just being drearily resigned to it, you know, resignation. It's like, oh, you know, life's a bitch and then you die, you know, that sort of thing. That's not faith at all. What I claim an orientation to faith that says, no, reality's right to be what it is. We're going to have to work with it. What that says is everything we do has significance. So merely resigning ourselves to evil is the opposite of faith. It's not it's not recognizing our importance. Everybody is important in the struggle. Nobody is another, you know, another rabbinic concept. It's not ours to complete the task. Neither are we free from participating. That's Rabbi Tarfon in Pirkei Avot. Mm-hmm. That concept that we are responsible, we are, because we are part of the big picture here, we are responsible for participating in trying to make things better rather than simply being resigned. But to participate to make things better means we have to accept that reality has a basis for being what it is. It's not just a bunch of forces that, you know, our job is not to extinguish evil. Our job is to channel these forces in a way that is better than it is now.
So you can't, though, merely accept it. You have to be an active player.
That is precisely the case. And what I claim, and I talk about this in the book, what I'm saying faith is the very opposite of resignation.
Uh-huh.
It's not like,
so you're not just sitting by saying, well, everything's going to work itself out or everything's going to be all right. No, but you have to actually do something to participate in that to make it.
Exactly. So. And really what part of it is recognizing that there is no such thing as not participating. Mm-hmm. You know, to take an attitude of dreary resignation is itself a form of participation, and it makes things worse, not better.
Yeah.
And so each of us is responsible for contributing our part of living better rather than worse. And we matter. We have an individual responsibility and we matter. And, you know, that concept of that our lives are meaningful and we matter is so much the stuff of therapy with people who, especially people who had a history of abuse as children, people who've, you know, come out of their upbringing feeling like, you know, feeling full of shame or full of a sense that they're no good.
Mm-hmm.
That sense of recognizing that, no, faith says, in fact, everybody starts off valid. It's another very Jewish concept, isn't it? You know, we say it every morning in services, Elohai neshama shenatata bi tohari, my God, the soul that you have placed in me is pure. We start off, we are valid people. And that's true of people even when they're doing horrible things. They're still valid people. And so there's no such thing as just sort of sitting back and not participating. That's a form of participating too.
Mm-hmm.
So that notion of faith as being central to healing is about that. And I find it so interesting when I talk with other therapists, you know, and I've over the years, you know, done consultation groups and supervision groups and things like that with lots of other therapists, as anybody who's in the field probably has. And it's so interesting to me. I've known folks who are not in the slightest bit religious, but just embody this concept of faith when they're working with people. They're conveying the sense that no matter what you're going through, you're a valid human being. You're a valid person. You know, you're, if I were speaking in religious terms, it's like you're a valid child of God, mm-hmm. you know? Everybody is sacred in that sense. And I've known people who are not at all religious in a formal sense who embody that. And I've also known people who are quite religious in a formal sense who don't seem to embody that, who seem to be kind of reduce people down to symptoms and don't actually see the humanity in people, you know, good or bad, you know? And so I think when I talk about faith as key to healing, that's what I'm referring to. It's embodying that sense of faith that we are right to be who we are, even when we mess up royally.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to distinguish. I've been talking here about distinguishing between faith and resignation. There's another important distinction I want to make. You know, when we talk about faith, because look, that the Diana Acosta, our reviewer here, talks about how I use the word, what she said is, it's even explained, the word faith is even explained far beyond the meaning of the word itself, the meaning that we find in the dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
if I'm going to do that, I better explain myself, because otherwise I should have picked a different word or coined one myself. You know, I meant the word faith to overlap a lot with what people usually mean by the word faith, uh-huh. including religious faith.
Yeah.
But there is a form of religious faith that I claim is actually the very opposite of the faith as I describe it, and that's fundamentalism. The sense that this dogmatic sense that there's only one way to understand whatever truth is,
mm-hmm.
and anything that deviates from that is evil and needs to be opposed.
So how do you address people that are fundamentalist?
Well, I'm going to answer a slight variation on that question.
Okay.
How do I address people who are very religious?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No problemo. You know, I do that all the time. And of course, given where we are here in Vermont, the vast majority of people that I work with who are, let me start off by saying Vermont is one of the least religious states in the country, it turns out. But for all of that, I do work with quite a few quite very religious people. And of course, the ones I work with are almost all Christian, because that's, you know, the population we have here. And of course, the religious Jews around here, I probably know, and I can't work with them because I know them, you know. So I have worked with many devout Christians over the years who are perfectly aware, because I make them aware very quickly, that I'm Jewish, I'm not Christian. But I have great respect for Christian understandings, because I think it can be amazingly, you know, there is a lot of faith as I'm describing it that can be embodied in Christianity as in other religions as well. So I don't have any trouble working with people who are devout Christians. I have certainly encountered people whose view of Christianity I would probably classify as fundamentalist. In mm-hmm. other words, they're saying, hey, everybody else is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've met those.
Yeah, well, of course we have. But
I've sat on panels with them.
Yes, exactly. You know, but you know, even then, now maybe I'm veering into the quasi-mystical here, maybe not, I don't know. Even then, there's a way of being fundamentalist where you can see a twinkle in someone's eye. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's a way of fundamentalist that says, now we know we have the truth. That's what fundamentalism means. It's like, no, nope, we've got the right way, you're wrong. But it's nevertheless somehow loving.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, you know, as opposed to the kind of fundamentalism that appears to be loving, but is really massively condescending.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm so sorry that you're so stupid and benighted that you have the wrong religion, and I'm going to try and save you out of love.
Yeah.
You know, that's not love. That's actually a nicely dressed up form of hatred, if you ask me. But I'm talking about people who are very clear in their own religious understandings, who are also loving, genuinely. You know, it's like, yeah, I see you've got a different way here, and I even disagree with you, but I can still talk to you with deep respect. You know, that's embodying faith. That's the sense that, you know, I get this feeling when I'm talking to someone like that, that they're still classifying me as a valid human being, because we all are. You know, they're not so arrogant as to think that they can know better than God who's right and who's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So the fundamentalism I'm talking about is that kind that is a closed-minded fundamentalism. It's like, no, if you think that, you're a devil's agent and we have to oppose you. And we can oppose you with a smile, or we can oppose you with violence, but either way, we're going to oppose you. And that is I claim that is the opposite of faith. Now, you know, from my understanding of a Jewish perspective, I don't mean to claim this is everybody's Jewish perspective. That kind of fundamentalism is actually idolatry. Because it's claiming to human beings a godlike understanding. It's saying that we've got, you know, we know the way we read our texts is the only way you can possibly understand this, and anything else is wrong. And, you know, that's basically worshiping a text as opposed to worshiping God. Part of worshiping God is to recognize that God is way beyond our individual understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I am wont to do, I've been going on here for a while, as you know. And of course, this started with some questions of yours, and I really want to turn it back to you. Is this clarifying anything for you?
Well, yes, it is. So it's basically, the way that I see it is that you have to not be resigned to what your fate is, but take an active role that you can shape your own, I guess maybe destiny in this sense, or your own reality. So when you say that reality is right, it might not be right for everybody, but you have to find what's right for you and make that work for you when you're in your relationship and whatever problems you're having, that you're not, you might not have control of what the other person is doing, but you can have control over what you do and your reaction to it.
Yeah.
Does that sound like it's what more in line what you're talking about
That's
with faith?
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, the one thing I would say when you said, you know, you can shape your own reality, I would tweak that a little, and I would say, well, you can influence your own reality.
Mm.
And of course, when people are depressed, or you know, not even to use the more, you know, kind of medical sounding term, when people are just really bummed out, when people are, you know, come to me. As couples, especially, they come and they're frustrated and they're stuck, you know, that feeling that they actually have some influence over what happens. They don't have perfect control over it, but they have influence.
Mm-hmm.
Giving people a sense of that agency is really crucial in letting them then, you know, solve whatever problems they have. You know, there are some problems that simply aren't soluble the way you might wish they would be.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm thinking, you know, it, particularly with couples where there might be infidelity involved.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you're the woman and your husband has cheated on you. So as far as reality goes, you have to figure out what role did I play in this? And if it turns out, you know, you might have some culpability in that situation. Or you just might find that you had nothing to do with it and he's just a creep and you don't want to be with the guy anymore.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
if you do find that through a lot of self-examination that, yeah, I played a part in that. So maybe we can move beyond that. And how do we build up our relationship?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm seeing that as a role of faith in being able to get past the hurt and the pain.
Exactly.
In recognizing your role in the situation.
Yeah. And as you know, of course, because we did this training together, we use some composite example couples. I mean, they're not real, but they're very realistic. And to sort of exemplify the ideas that we're putting out in the training. And we use two couples in our training. One of the couples, both of which are dealing with a very similar kind of infidelity. And what's fascinating, and I see this in my work frequently, the couples that heal, and by healing, I don't necessarily mean stay together, although they often do, but you know, sometimes they don't. But the couples that heal are the ones that exemplify exactly that kind of faith you just described, that sense that, wow, this is painful, but we're going to have to look at it as meaningful. And the couples that don't heal from it are the ones that refuse to look at it as meaningful. You know, because that sense that even bad stuff is coming out of things that we have to grapple with as real and meaningful and kind of necessary, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was saying about cruelty. It's like, yeah, there's cruelty, but we have to have the capability of sometimes being jerks. Not that that's good, but that's part of the idea of fighting for survival, you know? It's misused. That's what cruelty is. But still, we have to have that capability. So how do you manage that? Infidelity arises often when there's something seriously wrong in the relationship. I am not for a moment assigning moral blame to the person who didn't cheat. You know, the moral blame goes to the person who did. But it often arises in some kind of meaningful context. It's mm-hmm. like, wow, there's been a breakdown in intimacy in the couple.
Yeah.
And somebody then becomes vulnerable to someone else's attentions, you know? That doesn't excuse it morally, but it certainly is meaningful. The couples that are willing to look at that fearlessly, or I shouldn't even say fearlessly, they're willing to face the fear and look at it, are the ones who are going to be able to heal. And I want to touch on a very related concept there, the concept of forgiveness. You know, if a couple's going to heal from something, some kind of betrayal like infidelity, they're going to have to find a way of forgiving themselves and each other.
Yeah.
And forgiveness in this context doesn't mean saying, oh, it was no big deal, because no, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
It means somehow being able to let go of the anger and look at it as meaningful. And then they can make a determination, okay, well, I can forgive you because I don't have to be angry at you anymore, but can I trust you? And that's a very different mm-hmm. question. But if they can forgive and then they can come to trust because they realize, wow, this has been an arc of growth. You know what I mean? It's like, wow, look at how we have grown through this.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's possible for them to heal and stay together and be much better for it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the couples that do stay together typically are the ones where their marriage is better off than it was before because they did grow through it. And I think I quoted this in one of our podcasts when we were talking about infidelity. I remember a couple I was working with a few years ago where it was one where the man had cheated on the woman and they had done this amazing amount of work. I worked with them for a year and a half or so. And they were leaving town. And one of our last sessions, the woman turned to the man and said, "Hey, thanks for taking one for the team." And he said, "What do you mean by that?" And I said, "What do you mean by that?" And she said, "You're the one who had to feel guilty."
Mm, yeah.
And she was appreciative. She didn't say thanks for cheating.
Right.
I've never heard anybody say that. But she said, you know, something clearly had to give. We were headed for some bad conclusion in this uh-huh. marriage. And you were the one who did the thing that caused us to face all the stuff we had to face. Yeah, it was a bad thing. Got that. And he knew that. I mean, there was never any question about that. But she was appreciative of the result of it all. She felt so much better in her own life, even independently of the relationship. She was so much less stressed by things that used to panic her a lot that she was appreciative mm-hmm. of the whole thing. And, you know, last I heard from them, they were doing really well.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that was a couple that did the hard work and did have faith. And, well, I guess the outcome was better than certainly an improved outcome than what they had expected because it could have gone the other way. They could have split up. And, well, they could have been happier too splitting up, but it sounds like they did resolve it and built their relationship back up and fixed the parts that were problematic.
Yeah, and the key, just to tie it to our topic today, the key was they manifested faith. And mm-hmm. the faith they manifested was rather than insisting, oh, that was an aberration. It can't, you know, the guy saying, "I'll never do it again, I'll never do it again," which, you know, lots of people will say, and
right.
fair enough. But rather than just trying to dismiss it or put it out of their minds, they faced the pain. They
right.
tolerated the anxiety, as I'm always mm-hmm. preaching about for intimacy. And that faith to see it as meaningful, even though it's painful, even though it's got elements of wrong in it, you know,
mm-hmm.
that faith to see it as reality being right to be what it was, even when it's painful, that's what healed them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so different from an approach that says, let's look at the symptoms you're manifesting and we'll go after the symptoms.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's not a matter of black and white. There are a lot of grays, it seems.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. The grays, to tolerate the gray, which is hard to do when you're
mm-hmm.
in pain,
mm-hmm.
is an act of faith.
Yeah.
It's saying, well, there must be something meaningful here, though I'm damned if I can see it.
Right.
You know? And,
right.
But you start from that assumption, and that's how you heal. So I hope that's clarified.
Yes, that clears things up a great deal.
And I hope, listeners, it's perhaps clarified it for you. And, of course, also hoping that that will intrigue you just enough to go to your favorite bookseller and get a hold of my book, Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. As I say, you can't really tell from the title, but it's based on our 7-word formula that this podcast is named after. And the 7 words are...
Be kind, don't panic, and have faith.
Exactly. And it's the faith part that's my brand, you know?
Mm-hmm.
that's what distinguishes the approach that I'm describing, I think, from a lot of other really good approaches as well.
Mm-hmm.
So regular listeners of the podcast will know that we often have interviews on the program. And if you would like to suggest people that we could interview. We've had some really fascinating interviewees and we're always looking for more. So you can let us know that by going to my website, brucechalmer.com, or you can email me, bruce@brucechalmer.com, and suggest whoever you might like. And you might notice that several of our recent podcasts have interviewed, some people from distant past And if you want to suggest some folks of that sort, I will mention a couple of them that we've done. We did a really, I thought, an enjoyable interview with Ahasuerus and Vashti right around Purim, and also did an interview with Adam and Eve.
These are our off-brand podcasts.
Yes, these are. Yeah, I think we're gonna package these as Couples Therapy in 7 Words, the biblical edition. But if you want to make suggestions around that too, we're certainly open to them.
And you know, we also enjoy getting listener questions. So if you have a question about a relationship issue, whether it's with a partner or a parent or a sibling, we'd love to hear your questions. So feel free to email us, bruce@brucechalmer.com. And also, wherever you listen to your podcast, please feel free to comment and rate us and share and like our posts on social media. You know, give us the old 5 stars. So that would be very helpful. So our listenership has been growing thanks to you. So keep it up.
And so until next time,
remember, be kind,
don't panic,
and have faith.